So here we are, and the system is broke. American dream has gone up in smoke. So stop sitting there all brokenhearted. Let's get this motherfucking party started. Lady Liberty is ringing a bell, and we're driving us straight into hell. But don't worry, we got what you need. Crank up the volume till your eardrums bleed. Go and make America, America again.
Welcome everyone to the Better Way 2A podcast. We are your hosts, Jordan and Andrew. I'm Jordan. He's Andrew. Just to eliminate the confusion off the board.
Andrew's the one that sniffles and coughs into the microphone.
Oh, are you sick today?
No.
You sick fuck?
Just always with the allergies.
Yeah, or chewing into the microphone. But that was only one time. Anyway, today we have our good friend Texas Dane here. His name is Martin, actually, for those who actually want to know his name. But Martin is a gentleman that we got to know on social media and think he's a super cool dude. He's got a lot to share with us. He was in the Danish military for 14 years.
Yeah.
And then came to the U.S., is into guns. All this cool stuff, and we're going to talk about a bunch of really cool, relevant things that are really cool, and you guys will think are really cool. So
this is not a Jedi mind trick. You are going to like this episode.
Yeah, you are going to like this. thanks for coming on, Martin.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So
I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be fun because we've already done this before, and it was fun the last time.
I just want to point out that, like, I want to say it's been like maybe a year and a half that, like,
since you felt happiness.
No, periodically someone will, when we're talking about like gun accounts on Instagram that are like not Cheds, like periodically, I think like six or seven different people have been like, hey, have you heard of Texas Dane?
Huh?
Like,
really?
He checked out that account. Yeah. And you like, I guess you just like talk to people. I guess you're just like a friendly guy that is like nice to people.
Imagine that.
Because like a bunch of different people have like individually unprompted been like, hey, you should chat with Texas Dane. He's a cool guy.
I feel like you get a lot of these like sidebar conversations that I don't get on the main page. And that's fine. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, for sure.
You send me good, you know, ideas.
I send you good social.
You send me good social.
I think, you know, maybe part of it is just that I don't get as much engagement on my page, so I more deeply engage.
That makes sense.
It's just like a little personal Instagram page. It's not like a, you know, I don't have like 10,000 followers, you know.
I feel bad. Yeah. I
have like a couple hundred.
Dude, well, after this, maybe you'll get a couple hundred more.
Yeah, at least one or two more.
Yeah,
maybe
he is Texas Dane on Instagram.
The urge to hell yeah, brother, is so strong.
Hell yeah, brother. I think a lot of it is actually from some private Facebook groups, mostly left meme oriented, but also very gun friendly groups that I'm in that I run actually. And it's not a whole lot of people there, but a lot of them are engaged in the non-chuddy gun community. And so
they like you a lot.
I appreciate that. I must be doing something right. Actually, I'm good friends with a couple of the guests that you've had on before. The professor, Yaman.
David Yamane.
Yeah.
Professor Yaman.
Dave. Yeah. Yaman. Mark Ognianski and Matt Sampson. Are good friends of mine.
Oh, sick. That's awesome, man.
Those at least. Yeah. So they're good people. But I'm happy to hear that I have a decent reputation out there. Hopefully I'll have that after this episode. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
When everybody hears your voice for the first time and they're like, oh no.
Well, for those who don't know, this is the I guess nobody would know because we haven't talked about it. It hasn't been released. This is the second episode we've done with Martin. Because the first one we all decided to have a few beers. I don't think Andrew was.
I fell asleep with my children, came in an hour late, and y'all were like swinging. Y'all were, yeah, y'all we were like going in it. And I was like, oh, I got to catch up. And we all just got a little too drunk. And they were
drinking on the podcast is always like you need to find a healthy balance, because what will end up happening is it's not. And Martin had been drinking since, I think, what'd you say, 4 p.m. And we started at 10.
Oh, that's good.
Five. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
He's
five,
like, don't fucking. Actually, probably don't six. Give me that reputation.
Yeah.
How's four better? Not how's five better than four? It's not any different.
You don't know about 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's a social construct.
Yeah.
Drink whenever you want.
Time
it's not
is a
unhealthy.
Construct.
Exactly. Yeah. But we ended up closing out the episode. And
just saying hell yeah to each other.
Just saying,
over.
Like, there were so many hell yeah brothers towards the end of the episode. And I don't know if we're going to release that episode yet, maybe on the Patreon. But at a bare minimum, we will do a hell yeah supercut.
Hell yeah, brother.
To give you, and each hell yeah brother got progressively less understandable as the night went on.
Do you know that feeling when you're like, you're showing a home movie to one of your friends and like you're into it because you're like reliving what happened and they're like, what the fuck am I looking at? I feel like that episode was gonna be like,
like we were all having fun, but people listening to it at home would be like, these guys need help.
Yeah,
all three of them.
Yeah, it's one of those where you try to show your friends something funny and they're just sitting there on their phone and like,
oh my god, yeah,
the good part's coming up. Let's see how he reacts.
Yeah.
Hold on, guys, it's almost over.
still sparkling
please,
water.
Please clap. Nice.
he's like proof of sober.
Proof. Yeah, I'm drinking Kirkland Seltzers.
Hell yeah.
So Martin, this episode is—it's not even new.
We're going.
It's gonna be good.
We want to talk about.
I will say this: if we could start every episode before 5 p.m., preferably. I mean, this is great. 11 a.m. on a Saturday for me.
Now.
I'm so ready to go. This is nuts.
I hit
the energy
cold
level.
Brew. That's it.
That's the story. That's it. Anyway, Martin, let's actually start the episode.
All right.
So you're from Europe, Christ. The place that is has a reputation for not being fond of guns. Are there just no guns anywhere in Europe? You guys fight each other with sissy slappy hands, or is there perhaps maybe actually more guns there than people think?
More guns than people think. They're more heavily regulated. So. Europe in general, most countries in Europe don't have nearly the same gun culture as here. But in Denmark, for example, it is possible to get guns, and not all guns. But again, they're heavily regulated. There's some differences, some pros as well. Like suppressors are treated like any other firearm over there, so you don't have to go through the whole process. So it's been a while since I lived over there. Been over here for what, 12, 13 years. But when I lived over there, people were to buy rifles and shotguns were easy for as long as you had a hunting license. You would just go to the store, pick out which one you wanted, get the paperwork, take it over to the police station, close the police station, and it would do a background check on you online, which took like 30 seconds. And then you go back to the store, pick up your gun. That was it. Or if you bought it online, you just send in the paperwork to the vendor and it would ship it directly to your door. Not even an FFL equivalent.
That's fucking sick. And now, is that semi-auto mag-fed rifles or just like hunting rifles?
No, just hunting rifles, bolt action mostly, are most common over there. For handguns, it's different. It's they're taking the whole sporting purposes only to a next level, kind of like the import laws over here in the US. So you could only have sporting handguns, and they have to be over a certain size so you can't easily conceal it. And you have to be a member
What would they consider a sporting handgun?
That would be a full size handgun. You can have actually a funny thing. I think the minimum length is overall length is 21 centimeters, which is a bit over eight inches. So if you go buy a Glock 17 over there, you get the Danish model, which has a slightly extended barrel, just to bring it up to that size. Yeah. Glock 17 standard is too small. So it's slightly longer at like by 8 millimeters, which means nothing to people over here, but
that sounds like so pedantic.
Yeah. It really is.
What the fuck is a millimeter?
Yeah. Wasn't that funny we'll use millimeters here on top of inches and feet? Like, we'll go down to millimeters when we're talking about the length of something. We don't say, we'll say like eighth of an inch and things like that, but.
It's funny too with the US auto industry, they've been using metric since the 70s.
Yeah, it's fucking, it's so frustrating because everything,
everything
is metric.
It really has not caused me any problems.
Yeah, I worked in a shop for a while, and I guess my expectation was I was going to go in and everything was going to be SAE. And everything was metric. But the problem is now, as a result of that, the most commonly used socket, a 10 millimeter, is constantly lost. You have to invest in like a dozen of them just to do
your
job.
Why is that?
I have no idea. I think, it's probably because it's the most commonly used.
Yeah, well, it's also the reason why home mechanics have been running off fasteners since the 70s with imperial-sized tools.
Yeah. Trying to put a
quarter inch on a 6 millimeter. Yeah. Whatever's bigger, just fit that on there, round those corners off.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you're talking about on like a bolt?
Yeah. Like bolt heads, nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. If you can get a slightly larger socket and just get it to the point where like the nubs of the socket are on the nubs of the bolt. Right before it crosses over, that's the sweet spot. I think that's a big misconception here, is that like gun laws are so strict in Europe that it's nobody has guns, and then we see it from both sides of the spectrum here. I mean, obviously, compared to our gun laws, it is significantly. You are significantly restricted in Europe, but
you'll definitely hear people that are like pro gun control be like, we should have zero guns on the streets, like in Europe.
Like Europe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that works. So in Denmark, and it's pretty standardized in most of the European Union now, getting a carry license is next to impossible unless you're some political lizard with connections. That's about it. Like, normal people can't get a carry license over there. And even stuff like pepper spray is restricted.
That's something that weirds me out. And Britain's that same way, that like, even just a simple non-lethal defensive tool like pepper spray, you just can't have it. That's so wild to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because what's the offensive use of that? Like, you can't kill somebody with that.
I don't know.
Unless they're deathly allergic to capsaicin. I don't know.
Yeah, there was probably 15 or 20 years ago. There was a big to-do in the police. So Denmark is a small country. It's about 5 million people. And it is one police force. There isn't, not like over here, where it's by city and county, state, and so on. It's just one police force. They obviously have... districts and everything, but they're all standardized on their vehicles, weapons, uniforms, everything. And I think it was about 15 years ago, there was a big to-do or whatever, because they wanted pepper spray and tasers, so they had an alternative to guns. And there were some of those old boomer police directors that were like, oh no, that would be too much. That could be dangerous. Like, they're carrying guns.
Yeah, the pepper spray and could batons. Be dangerous.
Yeah, they have guns and batons and nothing in between.
So what's the general feeling towards police in Denmark?
I would say more positive than it is here in general. You don't really see them that much. And it's rare. Well, crime is a lot lower overall. And that goes back to the whole, a lot of it, the whole social system. And like there is a social safety net over there. But obviously that's woke, so we can't do that here. That's DEI and BLM. And
DEI, BLM, social safety net, communist, Denmark, Texas Dane.
BLT, whatever.
the LGBT over there.
Yep. Yeah, so
I saw
over there,
somebody say that the other day.
Yeah. There's a pretty good safety net, social safety net. So if you can't take care of yourself, like you can get help if you want to. You won't. It's not like that you're living like a king just because you're on welfare, but you can at least get enough help that you don't have to do crime, which helps a lot. So crime in general is a lot lower.
This is one of those big talking points that I feel like these anti-gun pages in anti-gun groups intentionally leave out when they talk about gun crime in the US, because it's, you look at whenever they compare us to these European countries and they say, you know, Americans are so crazy that they'd be okay with this because this crime rate is out of control and the simple solution is to just get rid of guns. Which,
yeah. What else?
You ever ask them to explain that, how that's possible?
What are the other differences?
Yeah.
And of
course, nobody ever wants to talk about the fact that many of these European countries that also allow a certain degree of firearms ownership have these social safety nets, have significantly better healthcare systems because they're accessible. And you don't, you know, these gun control groups don't talk about the fact that over half of the gun deaths in the U.S. are suicides. Well, I think I looked up a year or two ago the stats in European countries of gun deaths and gun suicides. And I think it was either Denmark, Finland, one of those like Nordic countries had like 2 gun suicides. Over a year's period, it was insanely low. And two, and to me that says something, and that should be a statistic that should be dove into to determine why that is. Because still have high rates of gun ownership, like per household, in these European countries, but the suicide rate is significantly lower.
Overall, and not just firearm suicides, but overall, suicide is a lot lower again because you can get healthcare. It might not be fast. That's one of the things when people are like, oh, we should have a healthcare system like in Europe. The downside to it is not fast. Unless you're actively dying, you may be on a waiting list for a while. But you can get treatment and you're not going to be bankrupt for 4 generations from having your appendix taken out.
It's different priorities, right? It's different approaches where you know, it's sort of like treating healthcare as sort of like a public utility as opposed to like a service that you can buy that's like on the market. And there's other, you know, there's like horror stories too. Like, I can't remember if it was like Britain or somewhere. So I think it was Britain where the NHS was like, you know, no, this kid is too far gone. We're not going to treat him. And the parents were like, like, what do you mean you're not going to treat him? And they're like, I think it came out that it was like, you know, there were discussions about the cost benefit of like spending all this money treating this kid that was probably going to die. And there were like not experimental treatments that were authorized. And so the state was like, you just have to wait while your kid dies.
That's a
reasonable thing for a bureaucracy to decide, right? Like if you're just looking at like numbers and names on pages and you're like running a whole fucking country, it can be very easy to be like, let this one go. But then
when you're
parents and you're like, I want to spend my life savings and go into debt up to my eyeballs to save my child because I think it's worth it. And the government's like, no, not allowed. That would really hurt society. You know? It's hard to take seriously.
Well, then again, Britain isn't a real country, so.
That's true. That's true.
But that's like, you know, we see, I know we're kind of in the weeds now, but you see these conversations over here where we talk about single-payer healthcare, and obviously that's socialized medicine and it's the devil and
goddamn
it's
communism.
Step into communism. Yeah. But then you see people who are saying, well, how about we compromise here and we do like a Medicare for all type situation, but you also have the option to carry private insurance as well. So like you
look at this woke nerd.
I know. It's just like things like that keep the conversation from actually progressing to a point where people can realize the benefits that it might provide.
Yeah, but that's the whole culture war we're in right now. Yeah, whatever one side says is the worst, and either fascism or Marxism, depending on which side you're on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or fascism on both sides.
Don't say that. You're gonna upset some people there. You dare talk about the horseshoe theory on this podcast.
No, I'm just saying what
authoritarianism
what
only
on the other
goes
side.
One way. Yeah. Martin.
Yeah. No, it's people on the right that say, oh, but the Nazis were national socialists, so obviously you are Nazis on the other side. And
yeah, and a bunch of Nazis aren't call fascists. Themselves freedom fighters. Like, you know, like, what do you want? Like, people say a lot. People talk shit. Like,
people talk out their ass.
Yeah. You can say whatever you want.
Well, I think somebody smarter than me will say something along the lines of how the Nazis had socialized programs, government-run programs.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like fascism involves a lot of state, of state planning, a lot of centralized.
It's like, almost planning. Like you need the government to control everything in order to be fascists.
Yeah,
yeah, like control whether you get an abortion or not, stuff like that.
Yeah, yep. Which, by the way, I just saw today the Republican, the Republicans have removed the. Push for a national abortion ban from their from their political plan, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. I'm not saying like they're going to be paragons of like women's rights any means.
No, not at all.
It would help a lot if they just shut up about it. If they did was shut up about abortion, that would help a lot.
It'll be interesting to see where that goes. They said they want to keep it for states to decide, but
I'm sure they did some analysis.
Yeah, that's how they said it.
And found just out like that, hey, this might not win elections if we continue this way. So,
yeah. Well, and, I think the damage has been done at this point, but we'll see.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Before we got off on that tangent, one other thing over in, at least in Denmark, I don't know how it is in the other countries, but the prison system makes a big difference, too, in the crime rates. So, obviously, there is a prison system. But it's not privatized like some prisons are over here. And they put more focus on rehabilitation than punishment. So you can get an education while you're in prison. And there are quite a few companies that have, it's a government incentive. If you hire felons who are on probation, you'll be subsidized from the government. So you have basically free work. And it's in their interest to keep that job because after, I think it's 5 years, your record is expunged unless you murdered someone or like aggravated violent crime. If it was just regular, small felony, then it gets cleared from a record after 5 years and then you can go out and get a normal job.
It's awesome.
And we're here, most states, once you're a felon, you're a felon. And you don't have a whole lot of options outside of crime. Yeah. You can go do some crime
and spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nuts. It's interesting how different the approaches on the same issues are and how widely different the results are as a result of that.
Yeah. So... Yeah, to get back to the gun ownership, I mean, the rates are significantly lower and it's fewer people. Normally, it's fewer people that have several guns for different purposes, like sport, hunting. Well, that's pretty much what you get over there. Those two options.
Yeah.
Because no 2A.
Yeah, exactly. There's no right to own guns for self-protection.
No.
So how does it work if you do use your gun in a self-defense situation? Say somebody's breaking into your home and you end up shooting them.
Depends on the threat, and that will be that's on a case by case basis. You don't have
that makes sense.
Yeah, you don't have like a castle doctrine over there, so it is up to a judge and a jury to decide whether it was justified or not. So if you shoot someone who, and again, it depends on the person who does it. If it's some frail lady that shoots a younger intruder who only has a knife or maybe isn't armed at all, she might get off because that's the option she had. But it's very...
Yeah, she's not going to fight him.
Based on proportional force. So...
That makes sense.
But yeah, generally frowned upon, though.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not like a culture telling people not to call 911 and posting signs outside their door on their front lawn.
No.
We don't call 911 in this house.
Yeah.
Sorry, Grandma.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to put out this kitchen fire with my 45 AARP. Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah. We don't call the ambulance of course, in this house.
Yeah. Of course, there is there's crime over there, and a lot of it is drug-related and gang-related. And the gangs are usually drug-related. So it all goes hand in hand.
Yeah, definitely. So what age were you when you finally joined the military?
I was 19.
Is that the like the minimum age requirement to get in?
No, it's 18. Actually, before I joined the real military, I was in the Home Guard for 2 years. That was the kind of the analog to the National Guard. And I don't know if you still can, but back then you could join the Home Guard the year you turned 18. So my birthday is late in the year, so I was 17 when I joined the Home Guard, and did that for 2 years. Was a designated marksman there. Did all that training, and then joined the real army after that. Full time.
That's cool. Gotcha. So you joined the military at 19. And ended up doing 14 years. So was there, is that like a, I know you were telling us before that on the last episode that you guys have what's similar to like a mandatory service over there?
Yeah, you have to at least, you go in for testing at 18 or the year you turn 18. So it's not really a draft. You can be forced in, but usually, or it used to be, I haven't kept up how many people they need a year now, and how many young kids are young men, because it's only mandatory for men. But usually most people are volunteers. Other than that, it's a lottery. So if you don't volunteer, you draw a number, and then it's based on the higher your number is, the less of a chance that you have to go.
So you can draw a number, and
it's yeah.
No, yeah, it makes sense. Like if you, yeah, if yeah, you and can then draw a number and still not have to go.
Yeah, because at the end of the of that draft period, whichever year they use, I don't know if it's calendar year or if it's split it somewhere else. At the end of that cycle, they'll see how many volunteers they have. And then we could fill up all the low numbers, and then see, okay, we need, I don't know, 500 more, and we just take the next numbers coming up. That's how it used to be, but okay. That's a that long sense. Time ago. Yeah.
I was about to ask a question.
Yeah,
no,
go ahead.
Sorry. No, I cut you. I was going to ask you, what's it like being in the military of a country that isn't constantly at war, but you deployed and went overseas? Actually, technically not overseas, but you deployed.
Oh, yeah. So I actually know it from both sides, both from not being constantly at war and being constantly at war. So it was, I joined in 97 full time, and did my first 4 years. And over there, it's 4 years isn't the minimum enlistment. It just so happens to be 4 years. I did. I was a staff sergeant, and then I applied for it's a Royal Danish Army Military Academy. So it's the analog to OCS over here. Got accepted into that.
Okay.
Had a bunch of PTO that I had to burn off. I did some courses, military courses. Actually, it was really fun. It was a 2-week demolition course. That ended at the beginning of September 2001. And something notable happened that month.
Yeah, I was going to say, just when the course ended?
Yeah, that was beginning of September 2001. And I had a 2 weeks of PTO after that before I started at the academy. So I was home, and it was so it's a depending on which coast you're on over here in the US. From the East Coast, it's a 6-hour time difference to Denmark and Central Europe in general. So it was early afternoon. I come home. I'd been grocery shopping and turn TV on and see, one of the World Trade Center towers is on fire, because it was all over the news over there too. And then I saw the second plane hit, and I was like, well, shit, this might have a certain
Did you call impact. Anybody over here to let them know it was going to happen, since you knew about it 6 hours beforehand?
I should have. Man, I could
You bastard.
Damn it, I could have prevented it. Damn it. Should have thought about that.
So you're just like midday, three years ago. You're watching.
Yeah. Yeah, like this is some shit. And then the whole Pentagon got hit, and the fourth plane crashed in the middle of nowhere, luckily. That's probably going to have a certain impact. So we had been in...
This might affect my job.
Mostly I've been UN before that. I hadn't been deployed to anything before that, because we were... The last thing we had in the 90s was Kosovo. That was a NATO thing, but I didn't go there. So I hadn't been deployed at that time. And I was like, this is going to have a certain influence on my future career. So
yeah,
I go
sure.
To the military academy. It's 3 years over there. And come out, and everything changed. Like they were trying to change doctrine. While I was in there, I graduated in 2004, but a lot of tactics were still based on, hey, it's a big enemy coming from the east with tank divisions and air support and artillery, and that's not what we're doing anymore. So
yeah, you were saying that you were in human intelligence.
Yeah, I was.
That's nuts, man. We had another guy on here that did human intelligence. It sounds like a pretty bonkers job to have.
Yeah. Yeah, we did it very differently over there. So we did some exchange work with the Brits and the Americans in Iraq. And we, like, when you went to one of their interview rooms, it looked like an interrogation room. Like we had our interview room was on a remote area of base down there. I was in Basra. We were on Basra International Airport now. But there used to be a military camp there, multinational. And we had this remote little interview room. And it was like, we had just furnished it like a living room. Like there was a nice big table with some comfortable chairs. We had a couch, a TV, always had water, coffee, cookies, everything. So we've just had
That sounds really nice.
That sounds,
yeah, I want to be interviewed there.
It turns out that the informants are much more willing to speak when they feel comfortable.
Oh, so you guys didn't have like a, what was that? That prison that we had over there where
Abu Ghraib,
man-made creations. Abu Ghraib.
Yeah.
Abu Ghraib. I could be saying it. wrong, but
whatever.
Yeah, that's not a great look when you're trying to get information from people.
Yeah, no. So the people I talked to, they weren't prisoners. They're all voluntary informants. So that's completely different. A lot of them came to us.
That's a pretty big difference.
Yeah, it's a huge difference. So some people we could take into camp. Like we'd meet them outside camp. We had a vehicle with blacked out windows, and we'd meet them like out of view of the guard towers. Like load them in there, take them in, and our little interview compound was completely secluded from the rest of the camp. So they could get out there.
Like, don't mind all that war stuff. You don't need to worry about that.
Yeah.
Come sit in our air conditioning.
Yeah, we had AC too, which was nice when it's 120, 130 degrees outside.
Yeah, for sure.
But they were all volunteers. So some of them we could take into camp and interview them there. Some didn't want to come close to camp out of fear for their own safety. So we would meet them out in the middle of the desert somewhere. So when we would go out, it was a small unit and we'd go alone. We wouldn't bring any escort with us again, because they didn't want to be recognized or risk someone telling on them. And both our translators were Danish, ethnic Danes, because they didn't want to talk to local translators because they could be pressured into giving up information, especially if they live in the area. So yeah, we had two translators. They were Danish language officers, and actually pretty damn fluent in Arabic. And then the rest of us were, when we're not talking to people, we had to do all the sketchy shit, security shit out there. And when we would drive out, we would look like any regular recon unit.
What does that mean?
So like you go out in like regular cars?
Yeah, well, regular military cars. We had Mercedes G-Wagon over there, the military version. A Mercedes makes, so it's a little less luxurious than the G-Wagons you typically see in the US,
but just a little
just a little bit, and armored and machine guns everywhere and smoke
armor can launchers be and
when someone
what kind of launchers
smoke grenade launchers
oh
sick
so like so you, yeah like, they had the fuck out of an area, you just pop smoke and just
you just pop smoke. Yep. Just like you see on tanks sometimes. You kind of have to be kind of careful with where you set those off because they're white phosphorus. So.
Oh, yeah.
Real spicy too.
Just do that into a crowd.
Yeah.
That's a war crime.
Oh, shit. I can't remember. I've told you all about the MPs that didn't. An oopsie down there, speaking of white phosphorus.
Oh no.
Yeah.
No.
What did they do?
Dude, I'm just looking at Danish G-Wagons right now, and these things are fucking legit.
Yeah,
right
if
now.
You look up the escort version, that's what we had. It's an open top.
Let me see if I can pull that up.
Yeah. It's an open top. Two roll bars and then a couple of machine guns on there. So it's a G270 escort. No, so the MPs down there, they were doing MP stuff, and usually we would say those are guys that aren't smart enough to be real cops. But anyway, they were running around. There were some kids throwing rocks at them, as kids do, and one of them decides, "Oh, I'm going to throw a flashbang at them," except he grabbed the wrong one. It was a white phosphorus into a group of kids.
Oh shit!
Big ouch.
Yeah, yep.
White phosphorus into the kid. Oh man.
Yeah,
that thing's cool as fuck.
Did they?
Yeah. Speaking of white phosphorus shooting into kids, here's a sick truck. For those of you who are listening, we'll have this episode on YouTube. You can see what we're looking, or you can just Google it yourself. But yeah, that thing's pretty dope.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't have a 50 on ours.
But the kids, were the kids okay?
I'm going to guess not. Okay.
So that.
No,
that,
babies.
Yeah, no, it was pretty bad. And well, obviously that guy got court-martialed, and then they replaced our flashbang grenades with some that didn't look like the white phosphorus grenades.
Yeah,
well, that's good.
Yeah,
it was bad. Also, every time
anyone
the,
came
MPs.
To just stay in camp and direct traffic or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Fair.
Sorry.
That's one of those things that that's hard to come back to. We had a couple of those. Not me. But the U.S. had a couple of those where situations where there was like dozens of civilian casualties.
Yeah.
I think one of the famous ones was infamous ones was a unit that had just lost a couple of guys due to an actual attack. They went into the town to go find them, but ended up killing a whole bunch of civilians because they were all just pissed off.
Yeah, there's been a
they
couple
made a movie
of
about it. I forget what it is. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's actually a whole
Vietnam
world like
too.
Vietnam.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, what was I thinking of?
I don't know.
Shit.
So, how long were you doing that for? How long were you actually deployed doing that for?
That one was about a year down there.
So what'd you do for the other 13?
Well, a lot of it was school. Well, then I came back from there and then I signed up. Like there was the other thing. I actually got divorced when I was home from leave from Iraq. So that was fun.
Oh,
is that, fun. Are we sorry or is that congratulations?
Oh, congratulations. We've been separated for a good while, but I went and signed the paperwork while I was home on leave. And then I went and got really drunk afterwards. So
no. As you do.
Yeah. Yeah, and fucked up.
And then came on our podcast.
The worst part about it, well, I'm happy that's over, but I had just been in, like 3 days before. We'd been in a firefight and then come home and do that. And just that total change of scenery and setting and everything. Yeah. That's a mind fuck.
Yeah, for sure.
And in general, coming home from deployment is the easiest fucking thing ever when it comes to your like everyday life, unless you're in some, forward operations base somewhere. Like there's someone who cooks for you. There's someone who does your laundry. Like you just have to concentrate on working. That's about it. And in our camp,
all you gotta
like,
do is not die.
Yeah, pretty much. And our camp, like it was like a 2 minute walk over to the mess tent, and then a couple minutes walk up to the office, and a couple minutes walk over to the motor pool. It was super easy. In that way, and then you come home, and you're like, first time you go to a grocery store, and it's like, how does this work again?
Did you have what was the typical? So what time frame was this in? Like what years were you?
It was in 2006, 2007. Oh, then I got home. No, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say was the temperament of the citizens of the country similar to how you think it was over here, where like the military was God's gift to green earth, nobody could touch them, or was it just kind of How did that go when you got home and people found out that you had gone over there? What was that like?
It was a little off the thank you for your service, but not as much as it is here. Not at all. No, it was mostly thank you for going. I was like, it was a job. What?
Oh, just like people like, oh, thanks for doing your job.
Yeah, pretty much. No, so where I was going with this, when I got home from there, I was like, oh, just got divorced. Didn't really know what else to do. And then you're home and just doing, then it's just work. You're going to work, you're still military, but you're just going to work and you missed the excitement of it. So I signed up for another deployment for a similar unit in Afghanistan. And started training for that, and it was like a long-range patrol unit up in northern Afghanistan, up in the mountains. Started training for that, and then that unit got closed down, like on a military level. Like they're like, oh, we're just gonna focus down on the Helmand province where most of the Danish troops were. So that got closed down. Didn't go there, but my personnel officer called me and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I know you're going to go to Afghanistan, but yeah, that you're not going anyway. But have you ever been to Africa? I was like, no, but continue.
Can't say I have.
Yeah. And then I spent was 9 months in Sudan after that.
Sudan. So, that's all over the news now.
Yeah. Yeah, there was back in 2009 and 10.
Fucking Civil War,
Jordan. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. I thought you were talking about something else with the tier one group. Oh, that wasn't in Sudan. Don't mind me.
Somalia you're thinking of. It's right next door.
Possibly.
But yeah, that was interesting. That was completely different. There was a UN mission. I was a military observer there. So
how is that working for the UN?
Different. So you're basically on loan. As an observer, you're on loan to the UN. And there were people from, I think, 20 or 30 different countries in our camp alone. And you really see the cultural differences and the different levels of education and training and also other all military culture is with them. But it was interesting. There were some challenges where like, okay, I can't depend on this person having the same training and same experience, even though we're the same rank. Just depending on where they're from, because it's so different. And then the actual security forces we had in our sector were from Kenya and Zambia, and they were actually really, really good soldiers. They did a good job. Mostly they were just there to protect us when we were out. But yeah, they were great. They were little.
That's awesome.
Little too influenced, like their culture was a little too influenced by the whole British Empire thing, where you're not allowed to think for yourself unless you are like a higher ranking officer. Like their initiative is, hold on here. Let me just let the dog out real quick. Hold on.
Hey folks, you know what blows? Buying stuff for your gun or your gear on the internet only to get it home and realize it sucks. Wouldn't it be great to take the guesswork out of buying stuff like that so you knew what you were getting was quality stuff? I'm so glad you asked, because that brings us to one of our sponsors, Panther City Tactical. Panther City Tactical carries AR parts and tactical gear, and only their favorite stuff that they personally use and love. Think brands like Bravo Company, Emissary Development, B5 Systems, S-Tac Pouches, and more. I actually got the weapon light for my pistol from them, and it shipped super quick, and because it was over $129, I got free shipping. They also throw in candy and stickers with every order, and being a slut for stickers myself, I thought that was pretty cool. On top of that, Zach the owner is a great dude with great values, and we wouldn't advertise anybody on the show that we wouldn't vouch for ourselves. So check out Panther City Tactical and use code ABETTERWAY, all one word, for 10% off your first order. Once again, that is code ABETTERWAY, all one word, for 10% off your first order. Check them out.
Oh, sure.
Letting the puppies out. Andrew's also.
All right, I'm back. Ish.
Oh, that was easy. That was quick.
Yeah. 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 I heard one of them knocking on the door, wanted to go out. And I think my wife is taking a nap.
Cool.
My wife.
My wife. Oh, that was another one the other night. My wife, and hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah.
No, brother. So. They still have a lot of that old British Empire where unless you're an officer, you're not allowed to make decisions. But if you're an officer, you're not allowed to do any manual labor at all. So that was interesting sometimes. That part of Sudan I was in has 5 months of rainy season where it rains pretty much every day and they don't have any paved roads. So a lot of our time out on patrol was spent just getting vehicles out of mud. And they were so conflicted when they would see officers go out and like hook up the winch cable and get their own vehicles out.
Like Danish officers or from other countries.
Yeah. Yeah. From other countries, because they're not used to seeing officers do like, I know more about winching vehicles out than you guys do. And there were some times where they would they would start pulling on the winch cable while I was winching. And like, you do not go near a winch cable.
No. Oh, no. No, when winch cable is under tension, Mr. Winch Cable is not your friend.
I had to shoo one guy off. He was just standing with, like, straddling the cable, trying to pull on it, like, between his legs. Like, no. Yeah.
Wow.
Get off my
way.
That's
a visual I don't want to see.
Yeah, no.
That thing snapping.
No, not at all. That was interesting that way. And a lot of it was, same thing. It was human intelligence. Basically, you go out, you talk to people in remote villages, and everything is a remote village down there. Again, because they have mud roads. They're not paved anywhere. The nearest paved surface from us was about an hour and a half flight by helicopter. So there was
You should really want to go touch pavement.
Yeah, yeah. Want to touch pavement? Well, you've got to take the helicopter. even though some of those towns are maybe, 10 miles apart, like they never, it was rare for anyone to travel in between. Because it was just such a harsh terrain, and nobody had vehicles. Like you see the occasional Chinese motorcycle, like a little 125 or something, usually loaded up with like a huge pile of merchandise, goods to sell in the next town over. But that was
trade caravans.
Yeah. Oh, we saw some of those too, with camels and everything.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Which was kind of neat. So I was right on the border of what's now Sudan and South Sudan. Back then it was one big country, but the South Sudanese are like sub-Saharan Africans. They're a mix of Christians and their old nature-based religions. And then the North Sudanese are primarily Muslim and are definitely closer to, say, Egyptians, for example.
Oh, okay.
And they have been at war with each other for centuries, if not millennia. And especially now, that area I was in, most of the people live there permanently are South Sudanese, but there's oil. So obviously the North Sudanese want that.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's zero Western influence whatsoever.
Oh, there isn't. It's Eastern.
Chinese. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's one or the other, I guess.
Yeah, China want that.
No, while in the early 2000s, while everyone else was distracted by the Middle East, Chinese went heavy in Africa, and we would see them out by the oil fields. Like you'd see a truck driving along, and you'd come up behind it, and everyone sitting in the back there was a cover truck. Everyone sitting in the back was Asian. And I was like, interesting.
Yeah, and it's one of those I was watching a Task and Purpose video about this really thin barrier between private contractors and like real official Chinese military, where they're kind of allowed to like permeate back and forth depending on the manpower needs of these oil fields and other facilities that they're building as part of the Belt and Road Initiative.
Yeah.
So it's based on our Western understanding of the difference between, private and public, they're able to kind of like blur those lines because they don't really, it doesn't really matter to them, whether it's a private contractor or a government organization.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not sure what they were. We weren't allowed to go near the oil fields. They had an outer cordon, which is all manned by the Sudanese oil police, which were all North Sudanese. And then the inner cordon was all Chinese, but we never got in there, and there were no fly zones over them as well. So Yeah. We didn't see them from the helicopters. Well, we could see them from a distance from the helicopters. We just couldn't fly over to actual sites.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
that's nuts, man.
Yeah.
So you, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so you, that was after you deployed, you went down to Africa for a bit, and then did you kind of finish out your career there before coming back to Denmark?
Yeah. No, I was on loan to the UN. Oh, and I'm just letting dog in.
Let's see where.
Can you still hear me?
Dogs take priority, man. I get
it. Oh, come on. Come on. Inside. Yeah, so we have this one white dog who has a very pink belly, but he loves to lay in the sun. And I don't
want to get sunburned. Oh, no, so he gets sunburned?
Yeah. No, I don't want it to get sunburned, but he was just flopped over on the patio right now. So that's not... it's suboptimal. I just need to get him in, and then the other one wanted to come in. So, do you boys have water?
Millie is taking full advantage of me wearing shorts and mouth cleaning my legs.
She really mouth cleaning your legs again?
The other day I was in here with jeans, and she was like, "Fuck this shit! This is bullshit." You take these jeans off right now, you son of a bitch.
So I guess your legs have a good mouth feel to them.
Yeah, I got real hairy legs, and I think she's just her like fucking weird sandpaper tongue. She just likes, I don't know.
Yummy.
Salty legs.
Yeah.
My Yorkie that as soon as I come in from outside sweating, she'll try to lick me, and I just that's not what I want. Shit.
Yeah, you made not that what I want. You made that for me.
Yeah, it's nice salt just for me. Just me. No, so I was still Danish Army when I was in Africa. I was just on loan to the UN. That's how it works with the military officers. Still get paid at home, and then you get your deployment pay, and then you get pay from the UN as well. So it's actually pretty profitable to do it that way.
That's pretty cool. So you get to like double dip a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. It's not cool. That much extra, but some at least. But yeah, I was still a Danish Army when I was down there. Then I got home and I was like, being home sucks. In the military at home, because everything is just boring when you're used to being deployed. I'm like, yeah, I got to do something else. So I was in for another year and then got out. So.
And then you were like, I want to be an American.
So I was working for
that was not the reaction I was looking for, but not really.
It kind of happened randomly. So I was working after I got out. I'd been involved with motorcycle racing for several years because that was kind of the thing I did when I was not being shot at. I'd just get on.
That's a whole thing I would love to pick your brain on outside of the podcast, because I dabbled a little bit over here and
yeah,
love motors, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Yeah. I did, just in short, I did, it was all amateur racing.
I've never been professional anything.
No. Professional bullshitter maybe, but
maybe I don't get paid for that though.
Maybe allegedly. So it was a road course. So like what you see at Circuit of the Americas, which is right down the street from us here.
Yeah, that's sick.
So we were traveling around to racetracks all over Europe, and I'd been coaching for this one German company for a couple of years, and they wanted to expand to the US and just do track days to start with. But they did like a whole travel package. So you'd come over, like fly over, it was mostly Germans, but Europeans in general, fly over, you got the whole package, go to a racetrack, they took care of a hotel and everything, and they had a bike there for you. We had a cooperation with BMW.
That's so nice.
Yeah. So you pay a ton of money, and then you get flown over, get a hotel, and then you get to do 3 days on a BMW sport bike, and then you fly back home. So wow. I went over here and did a lot of the setup, like negotiating with tracks, because we'd rent the track for a weekend. So we did Laguna Seca out in California. It was right around the time when Circuit of the Americas was being built. We didn't do anything there. We did do the Daytona road course. So
yeah, like just inside track.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually tried to get in Indy as well, the inside track there. But yeah, so I did that for a while and met my wife.
Ended up
sticking around. Sorry. Speaking of doggos.
So you're American by way of marriage, huh?
Yes.
Oh, nice. I didn't get any benefit when I got married. Nothing like that. No citizenship.
Other than spending your life with the woman you love, right? Yeah. Right?
Obviously.
Look at that scruffy puppy.
I
love that scruffy puppy. I want to hug that dog.
How are you doing? He's a good hogger. He's a really good hogger. He's about 70 pounds, so he's a big boy.
Hell yeah.
That's a great size.
And And his brother is here too. He's an asshole.
Five of my dogs.
Yeah. I met my wife and then ended up staying over here.
That's awesome, man. How long were you over here before you were like, wow, I should definitely take advantage of this whole gun rights thing?
Well, as soon as I could. Because I already had guns growing up. So as soon as I got my green card, I started buying guns. So
did you have like a chip on your shoulder about it and go into the gun store and be like, yeah, I'm an immigrant. I'm here to buy a gun.
Sometimes you
know, there's a bunch of people who like don't want people with green cards to own guns.
Yeah.
Because like they just think that they're all Mexicans, which is like even the case, who the fuck cares? But like, God forbid it's the white dude with the beard who looks like us that wants to buy guns.
I can go off on a whole tangent, though, about being a white immigrant over here.
Tangent.
So
we have that in our notes, actually, to talk about immigrant perspectives.
Yeah. So being from a West European country makes it so much easier. And it makes me, it's really the white privilege. So there was a, basically for me, it was to get my green card and date of my citizenship. I've been a citizen over here for 7 years now. It was so much easier just from being from West European country. And I saw, we'd sit there with a bunch of people, a lot of people from Central and South America, and a lot of Indian people too. And, all of them had a harder time, like had to go to more meetings with their caseworkers, had to provide more documentation. I mean, for me, it was basically like fill out the form, pay the fee, do the minimum interviews, and that was about it.
What's the reason for that?
Probably because they don't think that someone who's from Western Europe is trying to cheat their way in to take advantage of the system here. I don't know.
Yeah,
but I did see a lot of people who came from less wealthy countries. They had a much harder time.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, man. I think a lot of not that there should be a difference, obviously, but I think people, whenever they think of immigrants, they think of people who come in through our southern border, and they format their arguments of like what rights they should and shouldn't have based on their biases towards those people. And then you get somebody like you coming over who is like, you know, it's a shot in the dark. You know, you might find somebody in the gun community who's got like this weird obsession with Vikings as it is. Like it's just it's like a white bro vet.
Yeah,
thing.
No,
like,
no shit. Yeah, because of their 2% Nordic ancestry and the whole fucking personality.
I've got to shave my head and grow a ponytail like Ragnar. So I'm related.
My last name is Norwegian, but I'm ethnically mostly like German and, you know, like a little bit of Swedish.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, are you going to reconnect with your German, with your Norwegian roots? Are you going to learn about your Norwegian culture? I'm like, that's not my culture. Like,
yeah.
I don't even feel connected to like, you know, like any German
San Antonio.
Beyond like German like hill country, you know, like hill country German settlements and like food and stuff like that, you know. I don't trace anything back to Europe, but people get so weird about that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they really do. It's the same with I'm Irish, and it's like, well, you had some ancestors that came over from Ireland like 200 years ago, but
and
yeah,
I'll spare the people that like
my grandparents came over from Ireland, so does that count?
No, yeah. And there's like Irish communities in like Boston, right? Where it's like,
oh yeah,
you know, it's like they've been living here for a long time, but it's like an insular like Irish like community.
Yeah.
And I'll get that. But if you're like, you know, yeah, my great grandpappy was Irish and I live in Wisconsin now, it's like, no, like give it up.
Yeah. If you're in Wisconsin, you're probably more Scandinavian than anything, but
yeah.
Maybe German. No, but it is funny with the people that just make that their whole fucking personality. I see the trail of pagans are at it again.
Well, and that's another thing. It's like people now, I mean, the Nazis ruin everything for everyone. The haircut right now was made popular by Nazis in World War II.
Yeah.
I just can't. I got this haircut when I was in the Marines, and I was like, it's just a tight fucking haircut. That's exactly what our soldiers did when they saw the Nazis with their high and tights in World War II, but I can't tell you how much like I have to go out of my way to not look like a cop with this haircut.
And the mustache.
Mustache.
Exactly. But yeah, Nazis ruining Norse mythology and the Norse alphabet and all this stuff. Now you can't. I have a friend of mine who's covered
runes
in
shit.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend of mine who's covered in runes and the Norse alphabet and whatnot.
That dude just has a curse. He's got nothing to do with it.
But she's like, she's the nicest person ever.
She's like, I'm trying to get these runes off of me. I need a spell.
Yeah, but like people think she's a Nazi when
I
see her.
I've runes tattooed right here. And normally it's just covered up by a shirt, but like if I'm in a pool or a beach or whatever,
I got a Texan rune on my arm.
What? Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah, brother.
But yeah, it's not so much anymore, but it was like that time, probably around like the first, when Trump first ran, where the Nazis were being all, up in, oh, we was white kings and shit.
Doing
and,
their Nazi and, thing.
Yeah. And I'm like, and now I have these runes down my side that spell out love in Danish, but whatever. Nobody can read that anyway.
No, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, that must be Nazi. I don't think it's that much anymore. Plus, how I look, I'm white as fuck. So,
you're super white, which definitely.
But once people get to know me, whatever.
Yeah. So what you're saying is you shouldn't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, maybe.
Some people, if you have a swastika tattoo, I would judge that person by their cover.
At least give it a second judgment once you've read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Judge it first by its cover and then read a few pages and reassess.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. Read the
well, that's
the foreword.
That old golden rule, be nice to people until they give you a reason not to.
Yeah.
And if they're Nazis.
But for some people, a swastika tattoo is reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because they're making it a point to tell you how they're going to treat you or how they treat others.
Oh, yeah.
But I see people with like the Gungnir runes on their hands or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like some of these people are doing Nazi shit and some of these people are like, oh, it's Odin's spear.
Yeah.
I read about it on Google and they just have no fucking idea.
Yeah. And there was Google AI, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Google AI is like, this tattoo's fine.
Yeah. You should eat a small rock every day for your digestive system. Like, thanks, Google AI.
Yeah.
Was that a thing?
All the generative AIs continue to put out the most unhinged shit.
Wait, Google AI says that you should eat a rock every day?
It did at one point. They might have cleared it now,
but it was,
yeah, every time they find one of these aberrant answers, they go in and manually change it, which is so funny because it's like, you know, how artificial intelligence, it teaches itself, and they're constantly having to be like, no, don't say that.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't. They're not self-learning these things because it's not true artificial intelligence. They've just made these programs that are really good at doing very specific tasks.
Mm-hmm. They just show it a bunch of words and they're like, make like that. And then when it makes it wrong, they're like, no, different this time.
Yeah.
And they do that like a million times, and eventually it's legible.
Yeah. And Google AI doesn't like differentiate like, oh, we're pulling this information off the Onion. Or,
there's no understanding of satire. There's no
or Reddit. Yeah. Oh, we got all this from Reddit, and it's
everything on Reddit is true and good.
Yeah, and Reddit, you know, was
a
mistake.
I go on Reddit all the time. Everybody shits on Reddit. I don't know what the deal is. Like, I'm on there periodically, and I just see
Reddit.
Normal stuff.
Well, it depends on what you follow.
Yeah.
So. I want to get back to the conversation about guns and stuff because, wow, what is this? Me wrangling everybody, bringing us back to the topic? Who the fuck is this? What world are we living in? So you had guns, obviously, over in Denmark. You couldn't bring them with you.
No, I couldn't. Some of them I sold and some I gave to my dad. So he grew up like right after World War II. He was born in 44, so he's been around for a while, and there were so many guns in circulation after the war because there are some people that live down south, the Germans, they dropped everything they had and went home, and then the Brits especially came over and dropped boxes of guns and ammo in the woods for the resistance movement. So there are still guns from back then popping up randomly, and like the cops will still have the amnesty gun turn in bullshit, and most of the guns
that
get
just
in
keep them. God forbid you suffer through an occupation, you don't get to even keep the cool fucking machine guns they leave behind.
Yep. Yeah. And a lot of them were like a lot of Sten guns.
I feel like that should be international law. Is if you run off an occupying army, you get to keep their guns. Like, that's yours now.
You're gonna piss off a lot of people about Iraq and Afghanistan with us leaving our guns.
Fair.
Yeah,
it's
no, fair. I agree.
Finders keepers.
I agree. We left that shit there.
Yeah. We should have took it with us if we wanted it.
Yeah.
And what hurts the most. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm just shit talking. You go ahead and tell your story.
No, yeah. So he grew up. He lives out in the country. His parents had a small farm, so it was a lot of hunting and fishing, and like you can hunt perfectly fine with a K98 that you keep in the barn, or someone dropped somewhere they found. So everyone had guns out in country anyway. Yeah, out in the country, everyone had guns, and that kind of carried over. He was in the Danish army for a bit too, but it was back when Denmark wasn't involved in any wars. I think he started teaching me how to shoot just with a pellet gun out in the yard when I was like 6 or 7, something like that, and then. Yeah, so in my early teens, I started shooting in a shooting club nearby, and it was mostly 22 Olympic style 3-position, and did that for a long time. And then we'd have to go to other ranges to get the center fire, longer range, shooting 300 meter. Once I started doing that, it was a lot of again 3-position. And also we had something over there called translates to field target Well, it's basically where you just walk around to a number of stations. You're not timed on your walk. And then you have to, you have a part time, and then you get as many hits as possible on paper targets out there. And it was all, every station was 6 shots because there was a 5-round magazine plus 1 in chamber. And
so you like had to hit, you couldn't miss.
Well, if you just got points for number of hits. So yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. You weren't even reloading. It was just 6 rounds. That was it. Well, you're obviously cycling rifle. They're all bolt actions and they're all iron sight. And we did the longest we did. I've done at one of those matches was about 800 meters. So that's close to 900 yards with irons. My irons.
That's insane.
Well,
dude.
It also helps with that style of iron sight. It's have you ever seen the globe sights? That's a tunnel with a post inside, yeah. Like for the front side tunnel with a post in. This looks really wrong on camera, but
no, it looks just right.
Tunnel,
buddy.
Up front.
It looks great. Yeah.
So you have a tunnel up front with a post in it with a small ring, like then you poke that ring there. That's your front side, and then at the back you have a peephole that is sized so when you center that tunnel, like the shroud around it, when you center that in the peephole, and then you center that ring that's in the middle of the tunnel on the target, and if you got your distance right and you're halfway decent at shooting, you're gonna hit it. Well,
that's cool.
Out at that distance, you have to be more than decent at shooting. Like you have to get the distance right and sure. Wind and shit. So yeah, I did that for a long time. Was on the county team for years. We actually won the team national championship 1 year. So that's kind of what got me into sports shooting.
That's
originally.
Awesome.
That's
sick, man. Still have,
yeah. So
what was your
nurse dad? And then I shot some pistol on the side too, but it was mostly 22. And then we did some field target too, both with 22, and I had a 357 Magnum Smith & Wesson for that.
Oh, they let you have those sick. Magnums?
Yeah. So back at the time, there was a again with the weird limitations made by people who don't know anything about guns, like your upper bullet diameter was 38, so you couldn't have a 45, but you could have a 357 Magnum, which has significantly more energy than a 45 ARP. But rules made by people who don't know what the hell they're talking about. I think they removed that off a limit, so now you can't have bigger than 38 caliber. I know quite a few people that shoot IFSC. Over there too now. So that's you can, cool. you have to be a member in good standing of a shooting club to have handguns plus background
so when
check
you
and all the other
came
stuff.
Over here. Yeah, no, for sure. That makes sense. For over here, it doesn't make sense. That'd be infringement.
No. Yeah.
Hey friends, we hope you like the show. We like doing it. It gives us a sense of validation and the feeling that our lives will not be forgotten after our bones are dust and time has moved on. But anyway, if you like it, the best way that you can show that support is going on our Patreon and becoming a supporter there. When you become a patron, you get access to all of these sweet perks that come with it, like exclusive merch, discount codes, bonus content, and even access to our super secret Discord server. Plus, we'd appreciate it. Money buys our love, and we are cheap dates. So anyway, go to patreon.com/abetterway2a if you want to. This isn't an order, and even if it was, or just a bodiless voice on the internet. Or click the link in the show notes to check it out. But so when you came over here and you started getting into guns over here, what was your experience with the overall culture of gun ownership here versus when you were back home?
Well, again, it's so polarized over here. And especially the whole, if you're, well, those later, but if you like guns, you must be a mega asshole, whatever. And like, no, not necessarily, but that's just how it's portrayed. It's so political here. It's somewhat over there. Like the left over there is more anti-gun than not. But then again, crime isn't that big of a problem. That it's not a big factor in politics over there at all.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's not like a political talking point for people.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, so Denmark has a king right now, right?
Yes.
He has no,
yeah, technically, he has no political power, and they haven't had for generations. He's more just a figurehead, but they're generally better liked than the British. But then again, like I said, Britain is not a real country, so.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and he's actually, I've actually met him. He's a cool guy.
Well, it was back when he was,
yeah, well, back when he was a crown prince. I met the...
Did he make you kneel?
The queen is... No, he was...
Swear fealty, my lord.
No, he was busy hiding his cigarette because there was like a photographer around with, like press photographer, and he didn't want to be seen smoking.
That's so weird. I thought all Europeans smoked.
Yeah, yeah, no. But yeah,
he's like, that's a hurtful stereotype.
Yeah, no, that's Eastern Europe. No,
oh yeah, yeah.
Slavs.
Yeah, I'm thinking like Austria. Yeah,
yeah. No, so he was in the military for a number of years as well, and actually a really good guy, and I think he's doing a good job as just a figurehead representative who has no political power. And his mom did too. She was just getting old. I mean, not Nancy Pelosi old,
as
but
mothers do.
Getting there.
Yeah. That would be the ancient, you know, to continue. Yeah. And she didn't have any political power either. So that's different.
Yeah. She just got to a point.
What
where
a wild.
Like, I can't run around to all these events and stuff anymore. So step down. So she's in she must be in her mid 80s by now, but. Yeah, I actually met her too.
You're in your prime as a U.S. politician.
Yeah, that's middle age.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
actually, as a politician.
when you graduate at the military academy over in Denmark, you get to meet the monarch, who's the official signer on your paperwork for that, your diploma. So
that's pretty neat.
Cool.
If you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah. No, she was cool. The queen, the old queen, that's Margaret. Cool. But yeah. Anyway, there was tangent again with monarchy.
Tangents are good, man. That's what we're this whole podcast is built off of the back of tangents.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what the hell were we talking about? Guns, I think, and gun culture.
Gun culture in the U.S. So, versus gun culture.
Like I said, it's not really a political thing over there. It might be. I know in Switzerland. Switzerland is not even a European Union country, and they have a very, very deep gun culture, and have had for centuries. But they're completely different. I know the Czech Republic. They're pretty open with guns, and Finland is too. And especially now with, I don't know if y'all saw a couple months ago that Finland was. Like the state was funding was 200 or 300 new shooting ranges.
That's that's dude. Awesome.
I mean, sad and scary that yeah. Like why and they're doing it, but
yeah, exactly. And those with them joining NATO, Russia being like, that's you shouldn't be joining NATO because that's a hostile act. Because they have a shared border and they have a shared history. But we'll remember what happened the last two times they tried to invade Finland. It did not go that well.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and you know, as a Finnish citizen that, you know, Americans kind of take it for granted. We're like, any foreign army comes here, I'm going to fight them, you know, whether or not that's actually going to be the case. But as a Finnish citizen, that must be scary to like, maybe for the first time in your life, be like, you know, I may not be able to rely on the military. I may not be able to rely on the international community. Like, it could come down to, like, me and a gun and a Russian soldier.
Yeah. Yeah, and it that's what it was during the Winter War and the Continuation War and the like simultaneous with World War II. It was they wanted Finland, and the Finns wouldn't give up, and Finns are some of the most stubborn, tenacious people I've ever met. They're great, they're very serious, but they're great. The whole trying to invade Finland is just a bad idea. Three quarters of Finland is covered in forest with thousands of lakes literally interspersed. So can't really get tanks through, and you can't really use your air assets that well because you can't see the ground for just trees. So you don't have a whole lot of other options than sending infantry in, and that's also a bad idea. So
yeah, that's not going to be fun.
And especially when then the Finnish government goes out and says, "Hey, maybe we should make it easier for people to train shooting."
Yeah, yeah, for sure, man. That's I'm glad that they're getting on board with that. I mean, it's not that we're like an authority on training citizens, that are government sponsored training programs for citizens, because we don't like funding anything to benefit the greater good here.
No, because that would be woke and Marxism.
That would be socialist and Marxist Leninist and
yep, exactly.
We'd have to cancel that.
Yeah.
We're approaching the hour and a half mark right now, man, and I think we covered a lot of the stuff that we wanted to talk about. I think this was chocked full. I felt like this was very this was a very hearty episode. Like we packed a lot into an hour and a half, and
and I think lots of tangents to bite too. Out of this.
Yeah, tangents are good. Tangents are good. Tangents are mostly what we run on. But I have to ask you. I don't remember what your answer was the other night, to be honest.
Maybe I don't either. So,
but if you had one piece of advice to give to our listeners, what would that be? It doesn't have to be anything gun related. It can be if you want it to be, but it could be about anything.
I've been thinking about that because I've listened to quite a few of your episodes, and I would say on the self-defense, related side, carry pepper spray. Just doesn't matter if you carry a gun or not.
Everybody's telling me to carry pepper spray. I really need to do it. I'm gonna get on Amazon today and buy myself some pepper spray.
Yeah, get some
good
palm,
job, Andrew.
Thanks, Texas.
Get some palm. But yeah, carry pepper spray. I see a lot of people like, oh, when I'm out walking my dog, I bring my gun because if he gets attacked by a loose pit bull, it's like, so you think you can shoot that dog without hitting your own dog while they're in a fight? Just carry pepper spray.
Yeah.
And just give the
pepper,
just
pepper spray them both. You'll be good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can at least get them apart and then.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You get away from
there. And also. As a dog, I hear this a lot too, and it really frustrates me. I'm like, if a loose dog comes up on my dog or my kids, I'm going to shoot him. I was a dog sitter for a long time, and I know how dogs work. So dogs can be very dangerous, but a lot of the time that a dog charges, bites, growls, you know, whatever, you know, their commitment to the violence is very thin. And a lot of it is posturing, and you're going to be a lot better off taking, you know, measures in the, you know, taking early measures to run the dog off than waiting for it to become like a serious fight and then using lethal force.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of dogs, even when they come running at you barking, like they'll back off if you yell at them loud enough.
Like, shit, you don't have to talk to me that way.
Yeah. I do a lot of road cycling, and there are farm dogs everywhere, and they'll chase bicycles for whatever reason. I probably think it's fun, but yeah, most of them just back off when you yell at them loudly. And if they don't back off, I have spicy asthma inhaler on the top frame.
Yeah. Well, it's like a self-reinforcing thing. So it's like, they've got their little territory, right? Every day they see people come through in cars, on bicycles and whatever. They go out there and they're like, this is my fucking house. This is my land. Yep. Fuck off. And 99% of the time, the person they're barking at leaves immediately because they were already going to leave. But the dog doesn't know that. So they're like all day, every day, they're getting their nuts up. They're like, I am the badass protector of this land.
Look at all these people that I get to leave my family alone.
Yeah. And then it's like, the instant that somebody turns on them, they're like, oh, this isn't what usually happens. this is not how it was supposed to go.
This is not what I planned.
Yeah. But again, it goes for like aggressive humans too. Like if you don't have to shoot them, just give them a little huff.
And you can start the pepper spray much earlier than you can start the gun. You can introduce the pepper spray earlier and close off you can preclude the need for violence.
Yeah.
We shared a video the other day of a guy walking up to a car with a gun, and the dude on the inside of the car unloaded on him, and I'm pretty sure it killed him.
Yeah, I saw that video. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot of mixed reactions, but I was starved for content that day, so had to feed the algorithm. But no, it was good.
No, it's a great example of FAFO because the guy walks up with a gun in his hand,
posturing,
pistol whips the side of the car
with the gun to remind the guy, I have a gun, I'm the bigger man.
Yeah, and the guy you'll notice the guy inside the car waits until the dude puts the gun in his other hand so it's not ready to fire. And then pulls his own gun and engages.
I'm not even sure he could see that the guy had the gun in his other hand because it was right up against the door. But anyway,
but you gotta imagine when the guy walked up to the car.
And we're gonna talk to John Correa later, but he talks all the time about it. It's like if somebody comes up to you with a gun in their hand. You need to wait for your opening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But my point is, I've seen a video of a guy in the same position where he pepper sprayed the dude walking up to the car. The guy didn't have a gun, though. The guy walking up to the car did not have a gun, which is 99% of all physical encounters you're going to get into with road rage people or whatever. And the guy sprayed the dude in the face, got a good shot off, and the guy walked away immediately. Because he's like, holy fuck, my world is on fire. This is horrible. If you've never gotten sprayed with pepper spray before, it will fuck your day up. Like, your whole day is done. Because it gets into your sinuses, it gets down into your mouth and your throat. It's not something that, like, if you get a direct hit on, you can just power through without training, without knowing what to expect.
And even if people are either from mental issues or from whatever drugs they're on, like it doesn't affect them the same, at least they won't be able to see for a few minutes. So you have the chance to get away because your eyes are probably going to be cheering up and cramping. So yeah, it's
fucking awful.
My advice.
And wouldn't you, we got a lot of tough guys out here on the internet, but like, wouldn't you feel better knowing that you sent a guy home embarrassed rather than killed a dad or a brother?
Oh yeah.
Because
absolutely.
Or a mom or a sister, equal rights.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yes,
but statistically speaking, most likely a dad or a brother.
Most people doing violence are men. Frankly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I had this conversation with my wife because like we watched that video that you posted. And we were both like, obviously that guy FAFO'd. Like that guy found out. That guy, forget about deserve or had it coming or whatever. But like, you walk up to a guy with a gun, and he shoots you, like, yes, that's fair. Like, people are allowed to do that. But like also, that guy may have under different circumstances, that guy may not be like a scumbag in all aspects of his life. That might just be like a dude who shouldn't have had a gun in that situation, has trouble, with like road rage, because like normal people struggle with road rage. I mean, I've seen Jordan drive. That's a joke. That's a joke. Yes. That's a joke. That's a joke.
Yeah. If anything, I struggle with falling asleep.
Yeah.
Dude, that was, we were coming back from, sorry, short thing. Yeah. Short thing, and then we'll go. We were coming back from Woodland Brutality, the midnight shoot, and Midnight Brutality. And so previously, Andrew was shooting. I wasn't shooting. I was shooting camera shots. I was falling asleep standing up on the last stage while Andrew was, while we were waiting for it to be over. And then we had to drive home, and I remember Andrew falling asleep in the passenger seat and me, like, seeing myself not driving well and going to Andrew and being like, bro, can you drive? And he was like, no, I can't. I was telling, all right, time to push through. Like, no, I was biting the inside.
I was telling you to, like, pull over. Like, we can sleep in the car.
I don't. No, because you had to go home the next day.
Oh, yeah. No, I had to go home like hours from then.
You had to go home. You had to catch a flight in like 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he literally got home. I was lucky enough to be able to go to sleep. He got home and started having to pack. Like, rough.
It was very sleepy.
Yeah. The worst is when you're driving and you just start seeing shit that's not there.
Bro, I used to hallucinate all the fucking time. It would scare the shit out of me. I thought I was possessed.
I would see regularly, I'd see a big dog jumping out of the road.
Bro, the black black dog, that's a classic movie.
Yep.
It's a trucker movie.
It is a thing. Once you get tired enough and your brain just starts filling in the blind spot in the middle of your eye.
I used to think that the fire hydrants.
Maybe that's why I saw a dog because I think I saw that movie a long time ago, and it implanted that seed, and so that's what I hallucinated.
It's called something like the black dog, but yeah, I remember seeing. Yeah. I would drive past the fire hydrant and think it was like a little girl sitting on the side of the road.
Oh god,
bro, yeah. No,
yeah, no,
don't stop. I actually
read about the actual science behind it. I'm paraphrasing here, but so at the back of your eye, right where the bundle of nerves goes into your eye, you have a blind spot because there are no cells there.
And
so you have a blind spot, when you're just on your normal day-to-day basis, your brain just fills that in, and when you get really tired, it just starts filling in other shit than what's actually there. So fun times.
That's sick, dude. But anyways, I was just saying that, like, you know, you could definitely be in a situation where you could kill this guy and you would be within your rights and no one could judge you for that. But also you might feel better not doing that.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And a lot of times a lot of the random violence that happens is from people with mental issues that don't deserve to get shot. It's been quite a bit.
I hate talking about deserve. Like, this guy deserves to get shot. This guy had it coming.
All right.
Damn. Okay, Jordan, but we need to figure out.
We got most of that. I think I know what happened, but that was my fault.
How long have you been not?
Maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
Okay, all right.
We got most of you guys. We got everything. No.
So what you're saying is you recorded a minute or two and then got off.
Yeah, for the rest of the podcast. No, we're good.
Yeah.
If anything, it's like a minute, but I don't think I was talking for most of that. So
yeah,
Jordan, if you fuck this up for me.
I swear to God.
This episode was going to be my big break.
All right, Martin. Well, thank you for coming on, man. This was a good time.
Yeah.
A little more
coherent than last time.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.